Good afternoon, everybody. My name is Mike Gibb. I run AccountsRecovery.net, and I'm excited to be moderating today's webinar on the best uses for text messaging in collections. Companies in the collection and credit industry have slowly been rolling out text message as a communications tool, but understanding the best uses for this channel can be a little difficult. Today, I'm excited to be joined by a panel of technology experts from across the industry who are going to share their tips and strategies for the best ways to incorporate text messaging into your communication platform. This webinar is being generously sponsored by Solutions by Text. You'll get the chance to hear more about them a little later in our program. I want to take a quick minute and say a few words about AccountsRecovery.net. AccountsRecovery.net is a news and information platform for the ARM industry. The site publishes unique and curated content, maintains a number of email newsletters, hosts webinars like this one, and offers a number of exciting podcasts for the ARM industry. The site is free for anyone in the industry to use and is a great resource of news and insights to help educate and inform. I hope you'll all spend a few minutes every day checking out what it has to offer. Now, let me tell you a little bit about today's speakers. Jonathan Harbin is the Chief Information Officer at Frost Arnett. Jonathan and his team are responsible for managing the ever-increasing amount of data flowing through the company. Before joining Frost Arnett, he worked in technology-related fields at Nashville-based healthcare companies for more than 10 years. Jonathan earned a bachelor's degree in information technology from Middle Tennessee State University and is a certified information systems security professional. Ryan Miller is a senior vice president and chief digital officer at First Investors Financial Services. Ryan joined the company in August of 2017 and is responsible for the company's digital strategy, digital roadmap, and digital and marketing communications designed to drive an innovative, best-in-class customer and employee experience. He was previously employed by GreenSky as a vice president of product management over their digital experience and USAA as the director of product management over consumer lending, real estate, and the car buying experience. Other companies Ryan has worked for include Perot Systems, Advanced Fiber Communications, and the United States Army. Ryan is a graduate of the United States Military Academy at West Point. We also joined on the panel today by Mike Cantrell from Solutions by Text. The format for today's webinar will be a panel discussion. We encourage everybody to submit questions and we'll get to them as the discussion is ongoing and once the discussion has concluded. To submit a question, please hit the Q&A button or the question tab on your Zoom webinar control panel and send us your question electronically. This event is being recorded and a recording will be made available later today on accountsrecovery.net. Finally, I just want to ask everyone to take a minute and fill out the survey that should pop up on your screen after the webinar is over today. You'll also receive a link via email tomorrow to access the survey. Participating in the survey helps me develop content that's what you're looking for and make sure we're getting the speakers you want to hear from. With that, let's launch into the discussion portion of today's event. Let's start with a fairly blunt question. Do you think text messaging will replace phone calls and or letters as the communication channel for the ARM industry? Jonathan, since you're up on my screen right now, why don't you go first?
Yeah, sure. I definitely don't think they're going to be a 100% replacement. I think texts are another tool in your arsenal. And I would think that most people in our industry are using some way to score their inventory and choose how to focus their efforts. And I think texting is going to be able to replace a lot of letters and phone calls. I think it's a part of your strategy. You know, if you've got some accounts that are low, and you know this based on scoring or propensity to pay, things like that, you could shift more towards text because it costs less than sending letters. So you could, instead of sending three letters, you might send two texts and a letter. To reduce that cost, but still get a similar recovery rate. So I think it's going to be another tool in the arsenal, not 100% replace.
Yeah, Jonathan, I agree. I don't think it's 100% replacement. I mean, the way I've always looked at it and approached it is it's a piece of an overall bigger marketing campaign to get your customers to communicate with you, to talk with you. No, it's just one piece. However, it is, in my view, unless you can get them on the phone, which is harder and harder, it's your most impactful way of reaching them outside of actually talking to them on the phone.
the best and most likely way that they're going to respond to you?
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I'm seeing response rates when I send people text. I don't necessarily know right away if they've opened it, but I include bit.ly links, that hyperlink back to our website to where we want them to go. And I'm getting response rates of 28 to 30% within 2 to 3 hours after I send those texts out. So it's the most impactful. You just got to be very careful with it because it's also very easy for them to opt out.
Yeah, I agree. And we've seen similar response rates. And one thing that we've started to do as well to support our strategy is driving our consumers to our website where they can select which way they'd like to be communicated with. I mean, and you've got a lot of younger people that, you know, want to get texts and emails. They don't want to get phone calls and letters. And the response rates for those people, I mean, obviously they've opted in and they want to be communicated that way. It's off the charts.
Mike Cantrell here. If I could just add one more thought. Statistically, what we're seeing is that when you inform the customer by text and you provide a couple of options for them on how to engage you back, phone or short URL, what we're seeing is that 10 to 1, they want to self-serve. So as these agencies are putting their strategies together, make sure you're thinking about how to maximize the mobile optimized capabilities that you've got in play and give them those abilities to use short URLs and self-serve. Let me just also add that you've got to be ready because as soon as you start texting, you're going to see a percentage of those customers that are going to text back. So from a best practice standpoint, make sure you've got a strategy for that. And even if that just begins with an automatic message back that says, we can't provide customer service by text, call us. Don't let them experience a black hole effect when they text you back. But at some time, your strategies will eventually evolve to two-way texting, but that needs to be very trained and very controlled.
Thanks, Mike. That's an interesting, I guess, one of those sort of good problems to have is when you send a text out and you get a lot of replies back. Ryan, you mentioned you know, 28 to 30% response rate. Do you sort of, figure out your sort of collector allocation when you send out a text because you're going to expect that bump in replies or in messages back?
It's part of what we do when we do our workforce planning. We know when we send the text messages. We've automated our text messaging process, so we know what days we send it. Right now, we have not given the capabilities to our reps. Our templates, our risk group, our analytics group matches you know, who should be receiving which text to the group, and that's automated. And we're just kind of A-B testing with when we send them out, what the messaging is, you know, what are our response rates. Most people want to self-service, like Mike said. So it hasn't been a huge impact as far as calling. It's just one of those things that's there. They usually look at it. They'll click on that link, and it'll drive them back to our website where they can log in and make a payment.
Got it. Thanks. Jonathan, going back to what you were talking about with sort of driving people to your website to get them to choose the communication preferences, I'm imagining that's going to involve like a sort of login procedure where people have to sort of create an account. Is that how it works? And then from there, they can choose how they want to be contacted?
Right. Yeah. I mean, you want to make the payment process as frictionless as possible for the consumer. So we do have a quick pay option, but you know, if it's somebody who's going to set up a pay plan and they do set up an account, we do allow them to, you know, modify their profile, which, you know, goes into GDPR as well too, but we'll go down that rabbit hole. But you know, they're able to one, give us consent as well as choose which way they'd like to be communicated with. So it serves as two purposes. You know, part of the biggest problem with texting is getting consent right now. And a lot of clients don't have proper consent language in their forms when they send the data to a collection agency. So we don't have consent until that person goes to the portals. So a lot of times we're forced to, you know, start out with phone calls and letters and then hopefully drive them to the portal and then get them to switch to text at that point. So we're kind of using that portal as our funnel, trying to get as many people there as possible and then get that information back into our system to drive our strategies.
Yeah, and I like what Jonathan said there. You drive them back to the strategies, you get them signed up. The other way that I've seen where people are very successful is to incorporate it into their onboarding strategy. So try to get them upfront when they're registering online. Put that in that process. If you put it in the process, that's probably the best way that you'll get them to originally sign up. If not, you've almost got to do marketing campaigns to get them signed up and to make it relevant.
Okay. I'm going to use this as an opportunity because we did have a question that came in to remind everybody, if you have a question for Jonathan, Mike, or Ryan, type it in now and we'll try and get to it during the course of our discussion. But Jonathan, you raised the question and someone asked it, or you raised not the question, but you raised the topic and someone asked the question, how are panelists obtaining consent to text for the initial message? That's coming from the client in your case?
Right. So depending on the vertical that you're in, so our company, we're 99% healthcare. And right now we're only allowed to text for our first party clients. We don't have a good reliable way to do that for third party yet. But we do have some of our first party clients that do have that consent on their intake forms. And they do provide us with that consent in the data that they transfer to us. But again, it's, you know, less than 10% of our clients are doing that. So it's a marketing campaign for us to educate our clients. And most of our clients, you know, they know that if we can text and email, recovery is going to be better and we can provide a better rate due to lower costs. So it's in everyone's best interest. And most of our clients are in the process of updating their intake forms to make that better.
So this is Mike. I think I would also add, as far as your opt-in strategy, we're seeing a lot of that happen with what we call agent assisted. So for most of these large agencies, all their calls are being recorded. When there is an agent engagement and a right party contact, you're looking at the customer profile to see if they've opted in for texting. And then the agent can invite them to opt in for texting. We highly recommend double opt-in experience, asking the customer if they'd like to communicate about their account by text, a text message delivered with a unique PIN number or approval number in the message. They can voice that to the agent. The agent can complete an opt-in to confirm that the customer is in possession of the device for the number that was provided. Another interesting component of a strategy is the utilization of keywords in your lettering. So Ryan had indicated earlier that they're using short code service, which is exactly what you should be using, versus long code. We won't go down that rabbit hole today. But in your letters, it can indicate, we can communicate with you about this account by text. Text this keyword, and let's say that keyword is option, to the short code. When they text that keyword, they're opting themselves in. That documents an opt-in event. And then you can roll them message with a directive on how to communicate with you. So utilizing keywords in your lettering is another ingredient in your opt-in strategy.
Excellent. Thanks for the information, the advice, Mike. Before we get any further in the conversation today, I just want to pause the discussion briefly. And I'd like to say a few words about the sponsor for today's webinar, Solutions by Text. Solutions by Text is a division of Marketing Response Solutions, LLC, a privately held corporation whose primary focus is delivering critical information in an SMS format worldwide. SBT has developed a proprietary software designed to adhere to regulations within the mobile phone industry. Solutions by Text strives to develop a scalable solution with flexibility to meet industry changes in demand, maintain a functional user interface with various user access options, build products delivering a clear, consistent value, and construct a suite of services matching the demands of the consumer. For more than 25 years, SBT has partnered with a variety of organizations in multiple industries to design and implement a diverse SMS solution. SBT customizes a suite of services to meet client requirements and maintain ease of use. For more information, please visit www.solutionsbytext.com. Thanks again to Mike and the team at Solutions by Text for sponsoring today's webinar. Now, pick up with our discussion. We've talked about how to communicate, text versus email versus versus letter. I'd like to ask the panel now, what should be communicated? Should agencies send the same type of messages via text that they would send via letters and phone calls, or does text message lend itself to its own sort of set of communication messages? Ryan, would you mind taking that one first?
Sure. To me, like I said, it's your most impactful channel. I wouldn't recommend just basically using text to redo everything you do over mail or things like that. I would use it for your key, what are your key impact drivers? So if that is trying to get someone at an early stage delinquency, mid stage, use it with discretion because you don't want them opting out. Once they've opted out, you pretty much lost them and probably lost one of your most impactful channels. So my recommendation is use it, but use it with discretion and make sure you space out so that they don't feel harassed and it's relevant and they know exactly what you're doing.
Yeah, and I would add that too. So obviously with text messages, it pays to be brief. Most text message vendors, they're going to charge per text message, and most text messages that I know of right now are limited to 140 characters. So, you don't want to send the exact verbiage from your letter and all the, it might end up being 15 text messages, and it's going to be too much for somebody to read. So definitely be brief, and you can use like those short URLs, like Mike mentioned, to drive them to an actual like PDF version of the letter without having to mail it.
Yeah. And I would also add, make sure you put your company name in it just in case they don't have the company, just so they know who it's from and what it's about. I think mine is 160 characters I'm allowed. 55 of those characters are just the compliance language. So you, not only do you have to be brief, but you just don't have a lot of room to fit much with a short URL and a phone number.
I would just also add as best practice, these message templates are, and the language choice and the tone is critical. And we always reference the text in many instances as like the olive branch for re-engagement. You want to keep the language soft and you want to offer to help and give them engagement opportunities. We know that as long as they're opted in, they're reading every one of their text messages. So these men are right on as far as the limitations of the text message. I would mix it up, but in all instances, offer to help them if you've lost engagement or there is a broken promise to pay or things of that nature. And then always include that short URL so that they can self-serve if that's an option for them.
Yeah, and Mike, I know part of your question too was the types of messages. So I know, back to the question a little earlier, in the third party space, I think, I don't know of anyone at least that is using text for the initial validation, letter, the G notice. I know that the CFPB has proposed some laws recently that looks like it's going to open up the possibility of text and email for more letter types. I know for now we're not doing it for the validation notice, but pretty much every other type of message, payment reminders, broken plan notices, paid in full notices, things like that are perfect examples of where to use text messages. And I think some of the others that where we don't send it is the, letters revolving around disputes and legal matters. But anything other than those, I think are fair game.
Yeah. And Jonathan, are you using, when you sign up or when the customer goes to sign up for their preference center, how detailed did you get the preference center as far as what they're signing up for?
Yeah, right now it's just consent and communication preference. I definitely see that we could get deeper on that. I don't know as far as what you guys have done, but I don't know if it would be worth it to say, I'd like to receive this type of letter via text and this type of letter via email, and this type of letter via snail mail. And I guess that's maybe what I could tell you were maybe asking about.
Yeah, and we're not there yet. I mean, that's one of the things I had is to build out that preference center. So I was just curious as far as the detail, which you guys broke it down. I know when I worked at USAA, it was broken down by category. So you had payment reminders, you had fraud alerts, you had a number of different categories that you could sign up for. And that was kind of the area that I'm going with, and then work with compliance also from an opt-out so that potentially you set up different short codes for each level so they don't opt out of all messaging, but they could just opt out of that short code that references, you know, which topic they're being communicated to.
Yeah, that's interesting. I'm sure that there's probably been some studies in other industries that aren't quite as regulated as us, that could be useful. Again, you know, somebody opting out of one type but not all and still wanting to get some of those communications. So, you know, again, our industry is way behind everyone else due to the regulations. So I think we could probably get some input from those other industries and be able to implement what they've learned.
If I could just add a thought here as well. Collections has been the fastest growing category of messaging for all of our industries. And interesting enough, if you don't compromise the frequency and tone of the messaging, the opt-out rate universally stays right around 1.5%. And that's an incredibly low statistic. So from a strategic standpoint, I just want to reiterate that I totally agree with these men and what they're saying. The SMS is another ingredient that supplements your multi-channel communication strategy, and it just fits in there. But once the customer designates how they want to communicate with you, then that should become your first option with re-engagement.
Fair point. Jonathan, you raised the proposed debt collection rule for the CFPB, and it's an interesting thing because it doesn't address the topic of text messaging. We did get a question that came in. Do you expect the ARM industry to use text only in the limited content message framework proposed by the CFPB? Or would you expect them to use it more broadly in some of the ways we've been talking about throughout the last few minutes?
Yeah, I know that I haven't read through all of the proposed rulemaking. Our compliance officer has, and from what I can tell in the working groups that he is involved with, that we still have a lot of questions for the CFPB. You know, as usual, we'd like some safe harbor language and suggestions on, you know, how to phrase these text messages to be compliant. I know there's still a lot of questions around, you know, third-party disclosure and things like that were very vague in the rulemaking. So we're kind of in a wait and see mode, because even at the earliest, it's going to be a year from now before those rules are actually implemented, you know, and they could change before then. So at this point, we're playing it by ear. We're just excited that, you know, it seems like the industry may be getting pulled into the 21st century finally.
Yeah, that's interesting. I mean, we kind of have the same read. You know, the only other piece that I would add is if I've heard around the rules around being able to call and contact by phone get put in place, then text messaging and some of these other forms of communication are going to become even more important.
Okay, thank you. There are a bunch of questions that have come in, so let's see if we can tackle some of these before we move on. How do you go about verifying the cell numbers that you're texting still belong to the client? Anyone want to tackle that one?
Yeah, so that one has been a big sticking point for us as well. And there are vendors that sell a product that will scrub cell phone numbers for you. and let you know if it's been reassigned to another consumer. The problem is most of those vendors that we talked to, their accuracy rate was at best between 60 and 80%. So, you know, you're taking a risk there that you know that 20 to 40% of the people you contact may not be the correct person and may end up in a TCPA lawsuit. It's a risk versus opportunity discussion. So that's why right now we're actually choosing to not take that risk until there's some more clear guidelines from the CFPB. So we're, you know, starting out with a letter and driving our patients to that the portal to sign up for texting so that we, you know that it's the correct person.
And this is Ryan. So when we talk to the customers, we also have it through our digital channels, little reminders to update their contact information. We've got 4 or 5 numbers. We're constantly looking and just evaluating to make sure those are the right numbers. I think Jonathan said 60 to 80%. That's what we've seen. And then we push it through our reps on the floor to try to get the latest information. And then, like I said, we have the ticklers in the digital channel every 6 months to a year for people to go back and validate their contact information. But to this point, we haven't really pulled back. We're sending, if we've got a number we think is good, we're sending, and then we just honor, if they hit the stop, we honor the opt-out. But that's been a very, very small percentage up until this point. So part of our validation when they sign on and things like that is getting them to put their mobile phone number if we can get it. Our biggest issue, and Mike, you may weigh in on this a little bit too, has been burner phones and how do you track the knowing what's a burner phone and what's not a burner phone and just little hiccups around communicating with those.
Yeah, that's part of the technology that you're using out there. Reverse lookup capabilities are certainly available like these men have described. But let's just remember, in the third-party space, there has to be an engagement from the customer and an opt-in event, regardless of the data that you can capture on that phone. So what we've heard here today is that if there's a web engagement, the customer should be able to opt themselves in. If there is an engagement with an agent, there should be an agent-assisted process at which you can get that customer opted in. Letters, can you use keywords? Yes. I'll tell you, though, that they're going to engage you on the web, and you should build speed bumps into that web experience so they can opt themselves in for texting, and it should be a double authentication process, and they'll opt themselves in droves. They want you to communicate with them by text. But the next big thing that this industry needs to be aware of, and that is the deactivation process. See, what we're seeing is that it's very commonplace for customers to change their carriers from Sprint to T-Mobile to save some money. But now what's happened is the TCPA is required that the carriers provide the data of these deactivation instances. So now we've made a decision as a company with our technology that every night we're sweeping this massive amount of data of everyone that's terminated their cell phones. If they turn their phone off and that number is going to be reissued or repurposed to someone else, then we treat that like a stop command. We can provide that data back to the agencies because they need to take these numbers out of their dialers too. This is not your customer anymore. But this deactivation logic needs to be addressed in your strategy of how you're managing stop commands and cell phone terminations. Okay?
Yep, thank you. Jonathan, when you said you were including directions in your letters, is it a phone number, send a text to this number? Is it a QR code? How exactly are you sending that instruction?
Yeah, we actually include a QR code as well as, like you said, the keyword, text this word to this number and you can opt in. And those are the two ways. And obviously the web portal to make payments, all again, that with the aim being to funnel back to that portal.
Got it. Okay. Thank you. Looking through the questions here. A question, when a debtor opts out of receiving text messages, Does that mean they are also opting out of receiving calls to their cell phone on that phone as well? Or do you treat texts and calls separately when it's a wireless phone?
This is Ryan. We treat them separately. So when they opt out and hit the stop, we pull them out of the texting, but they're still live in our dialer.
Yeah, I agree. We do the same. They're two separate communication methods, and we treat them that way.
Okay.
From a compliance standpoint, I would just add to make sure that in the text world, if they reply stop, you have to send back a stop confirmation message. And based on what these men have indicated, it needs to specifically say, you will no longer receive text messages from this brand. For questions, call this number, so that you're specifically indicating that they will no longer receive text messages.
Okay. A question, how do you treat consent to text on phone lines under a family plan, i.e. someone else owns the phone, but it's not the, you know, sort of not the person who's using it? Is that something that you've dealt with in some way, shape, or form?
This is Ryan. It hasn't come up very often for us. It hasn't really been a problem. If they've listed it as a contact and it's a cell and they've opted in, then we communicate with that phone. And if they say stop, then we remove it.
Yeah, I can't say that that's something we've really dealt with much at this point either. But I would think that, you know, the person that is, regardless, if you receive that message, it's not really, it doesn't matter who owns that phone. We're going to remove that either way.
Got it. Here's a question that I think will echo what a lot of people are who are listening, as well as sort of in the industry. It starts, my concern about texting is with the TCPA. The debtors may have given us consent, but if they change their phone number and we text the new owner of the phone number, we are in violation. What are your thoughts on this and on texting within the context of the TCPA? I guess it all boils down to consent, right?
Yeah, exactly. Again, we talked about some of those reverse solutions. To be able to tell if a phone number has changed, but the accuracy rate on it hasn't been very good. If it changes to someone else and they text back with the stop language, then you take them out the same way that Ryan was talking about doing it.
Yeah, and usually with our compliance, you've got the TCPA guidelines, they are what they are, but it's a lot easier to work with your intent, and do you have as many control processes in place as possible to make sure you're doing the right thing.
Yeah, and this is Mike. I would just reiterate the fact that these carriers are required to put these deactivated instances. That data is available now. And there is methodology at which you can identify that and eliminate the ability to send a message to the next owner of that number.
Excuse me. We've talked a little bit about response rate, and we've talked a little bit about the different types of messages that you're sending out via text message. I'm curious if the response rate varies per the type of message via, sort of like if we're talking about a broken payment text message versus a payment reminder text message, you know, is there a lot of variance in the response rate that you can see for different types of campaigns depending on what you're texting out? Sorry, I forgot to say, ask someone to go first. Jonathan, would you mind taking that one?
We're not currently capturing that information, as we're still pretty limited on which clients allow us to text. I know that once we get some more clear direction and start doing more of that, that's definitely some of the analytics we're going to start collecting and analyzing.
Yeah, this is Ryan. I would say that in my experience, the response rates were relatively the same around payment reminder and late notifications. But what we did see is a much higher opt-out rate on the payment reminders. And some of this is just around they'd opted in, but did they specifically sign up for payment reminders? No. And so we actually ended up cutting off payment reminders because the opt-out rate was getting to 2 or 3%, whereas, I mean, we're usually well under 1% for any other messaging.
Okay. I know, let's take a break from my questions and ask another question from the audience. Do either of you or do any of you do any account negotiation via SMS now? I guess, Mike Cantrell, that's sort of the what you were talking about with the evolution of two-way texting, I'm guessing, but maybe there's another way to handle account negotiation as well.
Yes, so there's, you know, two channels there. We're seeing growing utilization of, you know, that digital negotiation capabilities where you're bridging them out to a web experience where they can negotiate a payoff with those resources. So that is one, but the other is in fact two-way texting. And this is where we just have to incorporate training standards with our experienced agents. The reality is they're negotiating by phone, voice now. Those same skills are going to transfer into the two-way texting space at very successful rates because, again, this is how the customer wants to communicate with you when they get past due. They will perceive a call as a potential confrontational experience. They may be embarrassed or whatever it is, and they'll engage you by text, and the negotiations by text are very successful.
Yeah, and we have two-way texting enabled. People can reply help, and then our agent actually will then reach out to them through the text mechanism. But we have a different group that actually handles and communicates with those customers. We just don't, our workforce is not where it needs to be, probably to have a texting conversation. So we've got a different group that actually handles those communications.
Yeah, I agree. We're at the same point. We're not doing the two-way texting yet. It's something that, you know, we're going to have to get some training around. I do know that agencies in other industries or verticals such as student loans are making heavy use of the two-way texting. And obviously with student loans, their demographics for their consumers are much younger. So it makes a lot more sense. But we do know that that's going to be something we're going to do eventually.
Yeah, and I agree. And Jonathan and I were having a quick conversation before this. I think what you're going to see is some of these AI type technologies also come into play with those two-way conversations as far as, you know, how do you defer some of those conversations and then get it to a real live agent when it needs it. But if they're just trying to make a payment or if there's simpler options available, there's going to be integrations with the AI capabilities and the two-way text messaging and other channels that you're using.
Okay, excellent, thank you. I'm curious, I'll try to get the right way to say this, or the right way to phrase this, but I'm curious how agencies can, you know, do you try and test a text message campaign and see how they perform against calling campaigns or letter campaigns? Would you recommend sort of agencies start there if they're just sort of dipping their toe or getting their feet wet in terms of sending text messages, just sort of testing it out first and seeing how it compares? Or, you know, as long as you have that consent, you know, do you think that it's okay for, you know, for agencies to sort of, you know, push and be a little bit more aggressive?
Yeah, Mike, I would say that's the place to start. As with anything in our agency, it's, you know, probably best practice to test the waters, you know, find that client that's going to be most receptive to their consumers being contacted via text, start with them, create a test and control group, compare the results. And then, you know, from what we've seen every time, when you combine the recovery increase with the decrease in cost, it's a no-brainer. And then you can use that to market to your other clients and grow it from there.
Yeah, I agree with everything Jonathan said. And I would even go as far as say there's the testing to bring it on board, But there's also the testing once it's up and running with segmentation, with times that you're texting to get better response rates, different types of phone numbers. So there's, I don't think the testing ever stops.
I don't like that answer. A question, any insight on the time of texting campaign? Do you send it, do you send text at the same time you would make a phone call? Does that matter at all?
This is Ryan. We're right now, we send most of our texts about 11 o'clock just because we span just the United States. So we hit some guys at 8 o'clock. You just got to be careful and not hit them at 5 o'clock in the morning. So that 8 to 11 time frame, and we're starting to test looking a little later in the afternoon. We're also testing to see, looking in the past and see which customers have interacted with us through what channels, and you know, what was the driver to that. And so there's probably a segment of the population that all you need to do is send them a text. What, you know, you don't even need to call them, do all the outbound dialing and everything else, because they always respond to text or email or things like that. So there's a lot of different ways to kind of look and segment this. It's just making sure you've got the processes, you got your baseline established, and then really figure out like what, you know, where do you want to be and what's good enough, but you're always going to be testing to try to get better.
Yep, I agree. It's more analytics. You know, as these campaigns grow, you can start tracking when people receive text messages and what parts of the day, and try a different time just to see if it does better than your previous campaign. So I would definitely say tracking those results and switch it up, see which one works best. You know, don't keep trying the same thing over and over. It's not working.
This is Mike. The only thing I would add there is most of our clients, we're seeing them rotate that cadence. So on days that they're texting, those numbers are not even in the dialers. So it's that, you know, call, text strategy, especially for those that you're dealing with broken promise. So that'd be my thought there for.
Okay, thanks. Jonathan, before you mentioned one of the benefits of texting is definitely the cost saving versus sending a letter, and how you look at your low scoring accounts and maybe send a couple of text messages and a letter versus, you know, more letters. I'm curious, is it just the low scoring accounts that would get that kind of attention, or do you find ways to sort of on your high scoring accounts as well send text messages?
Yeah, so it's not just the low scoring. That's what we're mainly using now, but long term, I'd like to, you know, be able to include more demographics into that strategy. So, you know, a 25-year-old lawyer in New York, we're going to send more text messages compared to an 80-year-old farmer in rural Tennessee. You know, just there's probably a good assumption there that one's going to like to be communicated with via text and one isn't. But yeah, I think it can play a part in any of your strategies. If you find certain segments that respond well to text, it doesn't have to be just your low scoring accounts. You can use it on the high scoring accounts and reduce your costs. And if it's not affecting your recovery, or if it's making it even better, then you ramp up the text. So, you know, we talked earlier about it not being 100% replacement, but with your own testing, you might find that you're able to replace 80% of your letters with text. For, you know, other people, maybe 40%, et cetera. It's something you just have to, create those strategies and measure the results.
Yeah, and I really don't have anything to add. I think Johnson summed it up perfectly.
Excellent. I would agree with that. I'm curious, there are, within a collection agency, there's operations, there's technology, there's compliance, there's all these different departments. And sometimes, you know, I think everyone will admit they don't always see eye to eye in terms of what the best strategy is, or what the best decision is. I'm curious, you know, Jonathan and Ryan, from your perspective, you know, would you like to see, you know, the agencies, you know, are what type of text messaging, or how more, you know, how much more texting would you like to see your company do? And do you anticipate that, you know, as you sort of continue to roll this out, that that's going to happen?
Yeah, I would say, like most things in our industry, it comes down to a risk versus opportunity discussion. You know, taking no risks is also a risk. But yeah, in every company, you're going to have, you know, operations is going to want to use more text messaging and email to drive, you know, recovery rate and reduce costs. And then you're going to have the compliance side of the business that's going to try and put the brakes on some of it if it is very high risk. And at the end of the day, it's going to come down to the business owners to make that decision on what their risk appetite is.
Yeah, and this is Ryan. I mean, we've always approached it as right now, how do you drive your customers to engage with you either through a phone call and or self-service channel to make a payment. So, you know, we're kind of in that process of developing a cost per payment metric. And so it becomes all the, how do all the channels work in concert? And how do you get smarter with how to reach out to your customer base and get them to make a payment or, you know, engage with you in some way or get them on a plan? So that's kind of how we're looking at it, and kind of our success metric to drive is, you know, did they make a payment, and, you know, what was the cost to get them to make that payment?
Okay, thank you. A couple more questions that have come in. Is the text message send and receive being noted automatically in your collection platform, or is that something that has to be done manually? How does that work?
Yeah, so this is John again. We started out very small with our texting campaign, and it was very manual to start. That's because, you know, we kind of wanted to test those waters before we put in a development effort to automate it. But we are seeing very good results from it. So we are slowly automating each of those pieces. And, you know, once our clients get more on board and get more consent language and we get more leash from the CFPB, we definitely would have that much more real time. And, you know, once text messages are made, noting the account immediately, whereas right now ours is more of a batch type of campaign, and then we're importing the results of that campaign into our system later. But as it grows, it's going to make more sense to get that more and more real time.
Yeah, and this is Ryan. We have a batch process, just like he was talking about. So we get a nightly batch that updates it into our system of record, letting us know that, hey, we shot out a text message to this individual.
This is Mike. I would just also add that as you're looking at your different providers, the provider should also maintain a communication history to every number on their side. That's a TCPA requirement.
Okay. A question just to confirm, I think I know the answer to this, but I'm going to put it to the group anyway. Are text messages scripted, or do collectors have the freedom to draft their own messages? If so, how do you ensure compliance across all collectors? I think the text messages are coming not from the collectors themselves, but from the company, correct?
Yeah, yeah, we're correct. Go ahead, John.
I was just going to say, yeah, we're definitely using templates, and we do not have our collectors sending text messages yet. That is going to be the challenge of when we do decide to start doing that. It's going to need training, compliance regulations, scoring, monitoring, all that are going to need to be in place just the same as we do for calls.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, I think it takes a whole different skill set. It's probably a little higher level skill set to start communicating with people in written fashion or text fashion. So we have not given that functionality to our collectors. And if we do, we'll probably do that through a certain group that works really heavily with our compliance.
Okay, excellent, good advice. Another question, got a lot of questions today, which is great. How many messages would you send to a customer without a response before stopping messages to them?
This is Ryan. Yeah, I was going to say we pretty much continue to send it to them. You know, we just don't do it more than 3 or 4 times a week. So it's really just being very careful with what you're saying, what you're sending, and how much you're sending. So a lot of times it's just going to come down to timing. Did you hit that customer at the right time, for example, when they have money in their account, or you're top of mind and they're getting ready to make that payment? So we never really stop. It's cheap. So it's more of a opt-out issue than it is a cost issue.
Yeah, I agree completely. The cost of the text is so low that we haven't gotten to a point where we've decided that it's not useful to text someone at that number any longer. It's more about not harassing the consumer and forcing them to opt out. It's more about the frequency than it is the at what point do you stop.
Got it. Excellent. Well, as we've discussed, there are more companies in this industry that are looking at doing this and looking at getting into the texting game. So I'm curious if you had any advice for somebody or for an agency, you know, how would you recommend they roll out a text messaging platform? You know, where should they start? You know, is it a particular message or a particular type of debt? You know, any advice to those that are looking to get into this communication platform?
Yeah, I would say we touched on this earlier, you know, like we're saying, dipping your toe in the water, finding that client that's best to start with. And then I would venture to guess for most other agencies are the same as us. The second notice after the validation notice is the next biggest cost for postage. So that makes sense to start there with your program. And then, you know, a lot of these platforms enable you to, you start out in a very manual process. Maybe you just get a Excel spreadsheet of 100 people you'd like to test it with. And most of the platforms and providers we've talked to will enable you to start that way, test it out, see if you like it, test the results, and then move forward with larger and larger campaigns and automating things if it does work out.
Yeah, I think that's great advice, John. I would just add also when you're selecting a provider, you know, look strategically. Are they integrated with your system of record? Do they have a lot of different ways to do the integration? You know, what do they have a portal? If you have plans and strategic plans to roll these out to your customers, is there a portal that they log into and send messages out and canned reports? There's just those things. Kind of look strategically when selecting those things, those providers, for, you know, how it best fits your business, because a lot of them have the same core capabilities, but some excel in other areas. And I'm sure, Mike, you could probably speak a little bit to that.
Well, I certainly wouldn't want to turn this into a sales scenario, but I would just say that when you're selecting those vendors, I would say three things. First of all, the TCPA is saying that your vendor should be maintaining the communication history for 7 years on their side as well. Best case scenario is you're building that communication history into those records inside your native software, no doubt about it. Also, your approach to stop management and now these deactivation instances as well is a big deal. And then just, you've heard it from these guys and they're on the money. Frequency and tone, the frequency at which you're touching them and the tone of your messaging will really dictate your success. These guys are giving you some great advice today.
Excellent. Well, we've only got a couple of minutes left before we wrap up, but what I'd like to do is go around the panel and give each of you one last chance to share any parting words of wisdom, any key takeaways, sort of summarize your thoughts for today, or even maybe address something you didn't get a chance to talk about, but wanted to, just based on where the discussion went, it didn't come up today, but just to sort of share any last remarks, if you don't mind. Ryan, would you mind going first?
Sure. I'd just start by saying texting is going to be there. It's going to be a very impactful channel there with the TCPA requirements. There's a reason to be a little leery into stepping in, but at the end of the day, we all need to be in business. We all need to be able to communicate with our customers. And this is going to be one of your top channels with messaging and some of these other type things. So, you know, pick that strategy, kind of crawl, walk, run, but if you're not in it, you should be moving in that direction because it's going to be a necessity and you just need to figure out how to operate within those boundaries.
Excellent. Thank you very much, Ryan. Mike.
Sure. I think my final thought is this. I know the TCPA is a focal point in your decision making, but I'd also share with you that the carriers are just as guarded or more so with what they're comfortable with happening in the SMS gateways. And the most common question that I receive is, can a third-party agency inherit a consent event from the first-party player and then just start texting the customer? The carriers say no. There has to be a separate opt-in event with the agency before messages should flow. So as you guys are considering moving into the SMS space, I just think that bit of information should factor in to your implementation strategy.
Good advice. Thanks, Mike. Jonathan, you're up.
Yeah, to sum up, I would just say that, again, we've all talked about how there is some gray area with this, and we're all kind of seeing how things play out with the legislation. So it's good to find a provider that's going to be able to grow with you. You may need to start small now and just select a few clients. Find a provider that supports that in such a way that they don't make it too difficult to start out with, manual batching, but then also a provider that has the end game in mind so that in a few years or, months, whenever that you're ready to ramp up, that they also have that much more fully fledged option portal to build campaigns and really be able to scale up quickly. So I'll just say a provider that can grow with you as we navigate through this legislation.
Awesome. Excellent for the advice. Thanks again, Jonathan, Ron, Mike, for your insights and your time today. Really appreciate the quantity and quality of information you shared. Also, Mike, I also want to thank Solutions by Text again for sponsoring today's webinar. Please go to www.solutionsbytext to learn more about the company. Thanks, everybody who asked questions. I hope I got to all of them. I think I did. If I didn't, I apologize. One final reminder to please take the feedback survey that should be coming up as soon as I end this webinar or when you leave or when you get the email tomorrow. The recording of this event will be posted to accountsrecovery.net later today. And I hope you stay tuned to accountsrecovery.net for news and more webinars in the near future. Mike, Ryan, Jonathan, thank you guys so much. You guys did an awesome job. I really appreciate it.
Yeah, have a great day.
Thanks, Mike.
Thanks, guys.